The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Mike Pereira, the former vice president and head of officiating for the NFL, is in his seventh season as the rules analyst for Fox Sports, and now he's the author of After Further Review, My Life, including the infamous, controversial, and unforgettable calls that changed the NFL, which is available now. Mike, thanks so much for joining the show, and first off, tell us how this job with Fox came about. When did you first get contacted about it?
Well, it's interesting because Fox is the one that announced my retirement. They announced it on the championship weekend of the 2008 season of Jay Glazer. I watched them come on and announce it, and the retirement was going to be after the following season. I was leaving after the 09 season, and, you know, I was stunned because what news is that, that the head of officiating is retiring? You wouldn't think that's newsworthy, but Fox apparently did. And, you know, it was championship game. We had a game on Fox. The game started probably 20 minutes after the announcement was made, and then 10 minutes after that, my phone rang in the command center. It was a 310 area code, which is Southern California. I knew it was Fox by the number. A gentleman named Bill Brown would call me a lot during the course of Sundays to ask me about a call or a rule. So I assumed it was Bill, but it wasn't. It was David Hill, who was the head of Fox Sports, who basically said to me in his thick Australian accent, said that, you know, that he said, you're not going to retire. We're going to put something together for you that will be dynamic. I'm not sure what it's going to be, if it's going to be an internet presence or if it will be an on-camera presence, but I remember him saying clearly, I will not do this to your wife. I like your wife. I don't want you I don't want her to have you around every weekend all year long. And so that's basically where it started. I had done yearly seminars at Fox with all their announcers and always got along really well with them. And David was a stickler for rules, and I think he saw the opportunity, and he told me at one point, he said, you know, I hire ex-coaches, I hire ex-players, and I've got ex-coaches talking about officials' calls, ex-players talking about officials' calls, but no ex-officials. And so that was kind of his reason of hiring me, and that's how it all started.
Yeah, so your role as a rules analyst is truly a pioneering one, not just in terms of innovations within football broadcasting, but also considering that this kind of position is now featured on other networks that broadcast NFL games, it's on the NBA broadcasts, golf, NASCAR, you name it. Could you have imagined the impact it would have when you started?
Not at all. I mean, you got to credit Fox because they were the ones that first reached out to do this. And, of course, you know, Fox has David Fay in golf right now. They have Dr. Joe Maxcheck in soccer, you know, who is his officiating analysis. I think it's necessary. Back in the olden days, you know, the whole notion was to sweep officiating under the carpet and don't talk about it, period. Well, that doesn't work in this day and age with social media and the transparency that's needed. And I think back in 2001, you know, when I was involved with the league and when I became the head of officiating, you know, the league was comfortable with me that, you know, I wouldn't get out there and make a fool of myself, you know, in front of a camera or, you know, near a microphone. And so that was the first that the league really reached out with me doing shows with Rich Eisen on the NFL Network at one point. And, fans are more invested in the game than they've ever been before. Their passion for their team, you know, is still certainly on a high level, but their participation in fantasy football where, geez, you're your own owner practically. You know, you're drafting a team and you're, you know, points for for touchdowns and sacks and everything else. You know, and let's bring the gambling aspect in it too. You know, people stick around and might watch the end of a, you know, a 28-10 game because maybe if one more score might affect the outcome of their wager. So I think they deserve to know more about officiating, and that the more that they understand the rules, the more they'll actually appreciate the game. Now, they might look at the rule or the interpretation through the color of their glasses, depending on, you know, what their investment is in the call, but the more they understand, I think the better the game is for them personally, and that's really my, I don't strive to be controversial. I have no desire to be controversial. If they make the right call, I'll say they make the right call. If they make the wrong call, I'll say that I think they're incorrect and give the reason why, and that's a replay stoppage or a clock issue, you know, whatever it might be. But I do think that, you know, fans now deserve to know this.
Yeah, and in giving those reasons and explaining the rules, it's one thing to explain a rule or something occurring during instant replay to someone within league circles, and it's certainly easier to do it without the constraint of time. How much of a challenge was it for you to try and condense your explanations, simplify them to a general audience within those short windows between plays during a broadcast?
Well, you can tell by my answers to you that I like to talk. And trying to cut it down was difficult. And but I mean, I did do it with Eisen's show, on the NFL Network to a degree, but it's nothing like being, you know, live on television where you know either from what you hear with the producer in your ear saying, wrap it up, wrap it up, wrap it up, or saying to you before you go, you got 15 seconds, or you know if you're looking at the monitor when you see the referee coming out from under the hood that he's going to make his announcement, you know you have to cut it off at that point. So, you know, you have to be simple and you have to be quick. And I, you know, my whole career I was simple when it comes to rules. I learned them, you know, I learned them not through just reading the rule book, but reading interpretations. A book that Ed Hockley did called a Hopper book, which explained the enforcements in a clear and concise manner, which is how I have to act now when I go on air. So I learned it kind of backwards through that, but in simple terms. And you know, if I were to read you, you know, what constitutes a simultaneous catch, if I read you what the rule book said, then you'd sit there for 25 minutes scratching your head and say, what does that mean? But if I just go on the air when a simultaneous catch is ruled and say, it's the first guy that gains possession in the air, whoever first gains possession, he gets the ball at the end of the down. If they both possess it at the exact same time, which is so highly unlikely, then it would be simultaneous. But in this case, the defender got it first. Done, finished, go to the next play. You know, it's just something that you have to work out. But, you know, I never really did have much of a problem with that.
And going back to when you started in officiating, as you well know, officiating is not a profession you enter into lightly. And based on reading your book, your father, Al Pereira, who was a longtime official himself, had a great influence on you. Talk about seeing what he went through and, in turn, how you got into officiating.
You know, I'll tell you, that's the most interesting aspect of my relationship with my father as it involved officiating, because I didn't play. I was a sophomore in high school and went out for the team, but I weighed 140 pounds or 145 pounds. And, you know, the agility drills, I was good at that. You put on the shoulder pads and I became slow and an easy target for the big guys. And I got popped in the hip on the first day of contact and shot free throws the next day. So I didn't play to any degree, but I learned the game through the eyes of my father, who was an official. And those eyes of an official are totally different than the eyes of the player. I mean, the actual playing of the game is a physical ordeal. It's physical. Officiating is mental. I mean, something, processing it in your mind, and then making a decision within 1 second. Within 1 second, you have to be that quick to form to make a judgment. And so I learned it through his eyes. And so when I started in officiating, you know, I had a sense of what I was supposed to do. And I really parlayed that into my time in the league. I looked at sons of officiating fathers when we recruited people to come become a member of the officiating staff, because they were naturally inclined. I mean, they had the initial sense of officiating. An ex-player didn't do anything for me because it was hard for him to separate the playing aspect of the game versus the officiating aspect, which is why in terms of the NFL, in my time, maybe we had three officials that had actual NFL experience. They played on a lower level in all likelihood, but not to the degree of the NFL. And I just think the feel of officiating is so different than the field of playing that you benefit from that early on exposure to officiating if your dad's an official.
Mm-hmm. You may not have been much of a football player, but as we read, you were a good baseball player at Santa Clara and in the minor leagues in Alaska. You hold several records there.
Yeah, well, I had great skills in baseball. I could run, and I could throw, and I could bunt. Unfortunately, the bunt doesn't get you to the big leagues, but it got me a good college career at the University of Santa Clara, where we had some great teams, and I did play in an unbelievably strong summer league in Alaska. They had teams in Anchorage and in Fairbanks only when I was there, and yeah, I do hold a lot of records. And I tell everybody, go online and look. You know, you can see most hits, most stolen bases, most walks, a bunch of them. I said, but just do me a favor. Don't look at the record for the most games played, because I played so many more games than the normal person that came up from their college to play in the summer, because the guys that came up there were so good, they'd play for 1 year and then they'd sign. Well, you're not a good prospect when you have to bunt the ball to get base hit. So I wasn't going to sign, so I ended up playing 4 years up there. And I am far and away the record holder for most at-bats, which is the only reason why I have the records for most hits and most walks and stolen bases, et cetera.
You detail how you got to this point, and it's not been without obstacles. At just 25 years old, you battled testicular cancer, and you're still fighting colon issues. I have to imagine that can make officiating, being barked at by a coach or a player or a fan, seem like a walk in the park. What kind of an impact, especially your bout with cancer, what kind of impact did that have on your professional and personal life?
Well, it had a huge impact, you know, I mean, and still does, quite frankly. You know, the bout with testicular cancer when I was 25 and had to have a testicle removed, at that age, I call it, I dropped out of society. I mean, I didn't care anymore. Obviously, I was concerned, and I went through a two-week period after having the testicle removed where they went through testing, and I had 2 weeks before the lab result came back to know if I was going to live or if I was going to die or if I was on probation, so to speak. But I got through that in a probationary period, and I still, it was like, you know, the attitude that sometimes you develop, I don't care about work, I want to live life every day to the fullest, and I escaped right after my last radiation treatment and went up to Alaska to kind of get my head together, but I did really, you know, for a couple of years, I really just kind of floated around aimlessly until, you know, my dad's boss kind of hit me over the head with a hammer and said, you need to think about something professionally. And then, you know, I did do odds and ends things that really didn't amount much, really, until I got into the NFL in 1996. But I fight the issue now. You know, it's no compliment for your doctor to say that you're a prodigious polyp producer. And I don't produce the easy kind to get out. I produce the tough kind, the flat they said I could extend it possibly to a year, but I'm under constant observation. And I, you know, I think of, quite frankly, everything that I have around me, and I'm talking about, you know, wife and sister. I lost my parents pretty recently, and then I think about my own life, and I don't know how long I have left. I really don't. I mean, and I know that with these polyps in my colon, there's going to be a time come where I at least will look at having the colon removed. But if I look at these things and say, what I do in football, it's fun, and I enjoy it. But there's so little significance to it, and when it comes in terms of health, and I've said to practically every organization that I have spoken to that you must get on top of this. You must get on top of it and get colonoscopies early on. You know, my God, they're easy. They're not difficult at all, and people fear them. They're easy. And if you don't have polyps, they say, okay, we'll see you in 6 or 7 years or something like that. It's fantastic. But, you know, your health and your family and your faith and all of that is so much important, more important than this game. And, you know, if there was one wish I could grant to everybody, it's that they go in and get tested from this for you know, the colon issue, so that they can ward them off at the pass.
Mm-hmm. No question about that. You had talked about some of the odd jobs you had done a long time ago, and one of those, I believe, was as a boxing ring announcer, and you got to be in the presence of two really outsized personalities, Howard Cosell and Don King. What do you remember about that experience?
Well, I remember Howard Cosell mispronouncing my name, and I remember Don King giving me the death stare because I wouldn't announce his name and introduce him in the ring. It was my first time, and really one of my only times in the ring as a boxing announcer for the Ron Lyle Jimmy Young fight in the Memorial Auditorium in San Francisco on Wide World of Sports. It was my big day, and the bell rang, and they parted the ropes for me to crawl to get into the ring, and Howard Cosell was right below me, and he botched my name totally, and then Don King was waiting for me to introduce him, and I was told that I couldn't, so I didn't, and then I kind of got the death stare. And I don't know if either Howard Cosell, because he felt bad because he mashed my name up, or Don King, who was mad at me, but for whatever reason, that was the only opportunity that I got to be a ring announcer. I mean, I didn't do any more fights after that. Howard maybe thought my name was too hard, and Don King wanted to take action against me. I don't know, but it was fun. That was my first time on national television, incredibly.
Yeah, well, eventually you got back into officiating regularly, went from being an official with the Big West Conference and went on to the Western Athletic Conference and then to the National Football League. What were the circumstances that brought you from the WAC to the NFL?
Well, I mean, you know, once you get to the college level and you're at a certain age, and everybody has different aspirations, but you're always seeking to try to work the highest level of football. It's a challenge for you. And you know, no different than, you know, when I started with Pop Warner football back in 1971. You know, once you got into it and got hooked on it, then you always sought the next level up, and that was the way with me, you know, in my whole career going up. And when I was in the WAC, I knew the next level was the NFL, and I thought my time had gone by, quite frankly, because I was 46 years old, and there is no age limit. But you know, when you looked at the type of people that were getting in, or the age of the people that were getting in, friends of mine, you know, they were at that level of 45 or 44, and so I thought I had gotten passed by and made some other decisions in life, including deciding to become the supervisor of officials of the WAC and get off the field, retire with my on-the-field experience. But after I made the decision to accept the whack job, I got the call from the NFL, and they said I was a finalist, and that they were going to put me through a series of tests, not tests, but interviews with psychologists and ex-FBI agents, checking out all the background, all that kind of stuff. And lo and behold, after getting through that, somehow I slipped through the system and got past the mental exam. I thought for sure, I told my dad, I flunked that one, but somehow I made it through and I got into the league in the 1996 season.
And yeah, your time spent as an on-field NFL official was as a line judge, and those are the guys that make the pass interference calls, which is easily the most difficult and most scrutinized call in football. Are you pleased with how the rule is currently implemented in the NFL?
No. I said this all along when I worked in the league office. It's too hard of a call to make. I mean, everybody's on the move. The offensive player, the defensive player, you, the official, the ball, it's in the air. Has it arrived? Has it not arrived? Is it catchable? Is it uncatchable? Where did it land out of bounds? There's so many variables to it that it makes it, to me, the hardest call to make on the field. And then you compound that with the pressure of it being such a punitive penalty. So you're 40 yards downfield, you call it, and it's a spot foul and a 40-yard foul. So you've got that weighing on your shoulders, too. And I was always an advocate, still am an advocate, of having the college rule where there's a maximum 15-yard penalty. I mean, there's nothing you can do on any single act in a football field that creates more than a 15-yard penalty, a single act, then pass interference, and it could be 40, 50 yards. Now, the offensive guy pushes out, he gets pushes off. His is 10. His is a maximum 10 yards that goes from the previous spot. I proposed this so many times to the competition committee and would get shut down, and because they didn't want to take away the deep vertical passing game. Well, you know, they say that if a defender got beat, he would just tackle the receiver. And I would go, will you please just take a Saturday and watch some college football? I mean, if a defender is close enough to commit pass interference, he's trying to make the play. And yet I couldn't make any progress. But if you gave me one choice to change one rule, and I wouldn't need the owners to vote on it, and I wouldn't need the competition committee to endorse it, that would be the one. I feel that strongly how the pass interference penalty on the defensive side is just too punitive.
Yeah, usually a defensive back is not, when he's covering a pass, is not thinking about tackling the wide receiver in that short period of time. Maybe this isn't the case because when you reach the NFL level, you have so much experience and you're probably immune to what others are screaming at you. But did you ever find it a challenge not to be influenced by the crowd, by other coaches and players in regards to what calls you make and don't make?
Nah, you grow through that so quickly. I mean, when I first started in Pop Warner and you're working little kids with their parents standing right on the sideline, you know, that was probably more intimidating than anything because you're so young and so early in your officiating career. But you focus all that out. I mean, you know, people say, oh, it's, you know, in replay, they're going to make a decision because they're worried about getting off the field. You know, hey, listen, there's only one thing that you're worried about as an official. That's called a downgrade. And that's when you make a wrong call or make a wrong decision, you know, if it's a judgment decision on the sideline or whatever. Because, like, you know, 2-3 downgrades in a season, and you might be out of the playoffs, depending on the position that you work. So there's too much invested. The old myths that float around, you know, I love it. The makeup call, you know, the makeup call. When you think of an official, you think you made the right call. You don't know that you made what maybe turns out to be an incorrect call. You think you made the right call. So what are you going to do? You're going to make a makeup call for what? For something you thought you were right? And if you did know, I mean, one instance, I blew one so bad in a playoff game that I knew I was going to get the dreaded downgrade. Am I going to make it up by making another bad call and then get two downgrades and maybe not even be working the next season? You know, so much of that stuff is just nonsensical, especially when and you have to make decisions in 1/27th of a second. I mean, that's basically what it is. In some case with the sideline catches, it happens that quick. You know, we have become, me included, the greatest slow motion officials in the history of sports. We wait until television shows it at super slow speed and then say, how did he miss that, for God's sakes? It was easy. That was obvious. Well, it ain't obvious when it's at full speed and you're on ground level looking around players to try to get an angle to get the proper look. But, you know, the notion of being affected by either a coach's chatter or crowd noise, it's just, it's non-existent.
This may make my next question irrelevant, but when I look at the cover of your book, there are a few pictures there. The one that stands out to me is the one with Bill Parcells, then the head coach of the Jets, giving you a piece of his mind up close. Was there, I mean, I know we're talking like 20 years ago almost. Was there one coach that was like the most, that you remember that was just the most brutal?
You know, the thing with Bill Parcells, what's interesting is he's not yelling at me. I'm between him and another official, and who made the actual call on the other side of the field, which turned out to be the incorrect call, and it was at the end of the game, and you could say that it cost him the game, and he went after the other official, and I got between them because I was worried about, you know, Bill being so upset. And AP, thank you, cropped the photo. They took the photo, but they cropped out the third official, the guy that Bill was actually yelling at, and so it looks like that he's really, you know, on me, but it's not the case. But you know, I don't know. You know, Mike Shanahan got on me once pretty good, and that's when I really did swallow the olive on a call in a playoff game. I couldn't do anything about it because I deserved it, you know, and I knew it at the, you know, shortly after the play was over. But for the most part, you let them blow off steam as long as they don't use the three-letter word Y-O-U before. You know, you'll let them swear on the sideline, but if they make it personal, you know, by shouting you, then it takes it to a whole nother level. And then that's when you either flag them or you suck it up, one of the two. But in those cases with the you word, they could get flagged.
One last question for you, and that is what you see as being the future of instant replay. Certainly, this current iteration of it in the NFL is the best of the major sports. And what I notice, especially in Major League Baseball and the NBA, is not only how much time they take to examine certain plays, but also the length and breadth of what they look at. And I fear something like that might be happening in the NFL. What concerns do you have moving forward with instant replay?
Well, the big concern I have is it goes forward in looking at judgment calls, because judgment calls are judgment calls. They're not based on facts, which is what replay, you know, really was brought into address in 1999, but now it's the judgment call of a catch. Did he hold on to the ball long enough? This element of time and judgment, to me, and that's what screwed up what is a catch. I think the technicality of the rule because of replay has kind of forced itself into the issue, and the common sense decisions that are being made on the field get overridden. And I just hope that it doesn't, you know, go down the road of judgment too far. Do we want to get involved in pass interference? It's a judgment call. I mean, it's not just contact. You know, did it impede the receiver's ability to make the catch? I mean, there's too many variations involved when you get involved in judgment, and I just hope, and it's beginning to head down that direction, but I hope it doesn't go too far in the area of judgment.
The book, once again, is called After Further Review. Mike, all the best with the book. I wish you nothing but good health and continued success on the Fox broadcasts. Thank you so much for your time.
You got it. Thanks.
Be sure to download and listen to all episodes of Profiles in Sports on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play, and most other places you listen to podcasts. You can also follow the show via profilesinsports.com or the Facebook page. And you can follow yours truly, Brian Wright, on Twitter, at BrianWright86.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.